Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith, and Elliot Watson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Versus History Podcast. It's another episode with me, your host, Patrick O'Shaughnessy at History Chappie. Today, I am here with a very, very special guest. His name is Dominic Frisby. He's a British author, comedian, and voice actor. He's perhaps best known, according to his Wikipedia page. He's got one of those. He's that important as a co-host of the Dave television program called Money Pit. And he's here today to talk to us about an aspect not to do with the Money Pit, but to do with World War II. So I'll say no more. Please tell us all about you, your background, and how you and your background link to an episode from World War II.
Well, thanks very much, Patrick. Like it says on that Wikipedia page, best known for this program, but literally nobody in the world has ever seen that program. So I'm best known for something that nobody's seen. Yeah, so but to come to your question, as you said, I'm a voiceover guy and a comedian and a writer, and my dad was also a writer, and he wrote, among other things, what was the longest running comedy in the history of the West End, and this was in the 1960s. A play called There's a Girl in My Soup, and it ran for 6 years and it broke every record there was. It's since been overtaken, but at the time it was the longest. And it was then made into a film with Peter Sellers and Goldie Hawn. And it was a huge sort of worldwide hit. But of all the things he ever wrote in his life, he always said the best thing he ever wrote was this story about his time in World War II when he was evacuated from his family in Southeast London down to Cornwall. And I first heard a radio version of this story in the 1980s, and I fell head over heels in it, in love with it as well. And then it was optioned to be a film, and then it got stuck in development hell. And then in the noughties, a long story, it was adapted into a stage musical. And I saw that and I fell in love with that. And that's the only reason I ended up becoming a financial writer, because I was trying to figure out how to raise the 5 million quid we needed to put this show on. Anyway, I never managed to raise 5 million quid. But nevertheless, this show has always been there. Now, Dad died in April 2020. And when I was cleaning through his stuff, I came across this script and the CD of the musical. And I brought it home. And then all through the lockdown, I was sat there and I had this script. There's a sort of shelf by my desk. And the script and the CD just sort of kept looking at me. And I thought to myself, if I don't do something with this, then nobody's going to. And so I figured out I was going to turn it not into a film, not into a stage musical, because I didn't have the money to do that, but I would make a podcast musical adaptation of it. And so that's what I went away and did. It's got a cast of over 50, a 15-piece orchestra. It was recorded at Abbey Road, which is like the most famous studio in the country. It's where all the Beatles recorded all their stuff. And I've made it, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. And now I'm promoting it. I'm trying to get people to listen, which is why I've come on your podcast.
And that's why you're here, of course.
Yeah. So shall I tell you, Patrick, shall I just crack straight on? I've given you the background to it. I'll just crack on and just tell you one little story from the show, because it's a true story.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for. Let's jump straight into it.
Okay. So it's 1940 and the last of the soldiers have just been evacuated from Dunkirk back to Britain. And we're in London and Hitler is about to begin his invasion of the UK. And he's going to start that invasion by bombing the UK to hell. To look after all the children in the cities, the directive came from on high, from Churchill or whoever his administrator was, that every child in every city in the UK had to be evacuated for their own safety down to the countryside. And this turned out to be the biggest movement of people in British history. There was something like between 3.5 and 4 million children were sent from their families to the country. And my dad and his brother were two of these kids. And my dad was 7 and his brother Jack was 11. And can you imagine being 7 years old? Do you have kids, Patrick?
I do. I have two, not quite seven. I've got one at 4 or 5, and one at 2.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm from London as well, so I know my grandparents were and their great grandparents were evacuated. So it's something that many Londoners would have experienced. But back over to you. Let's hear more.
Well, I was going to say, if your kid was 5 or under, mum could go with them. But if they were over the age
Ah,
of 5, their parents weren't allowed to go. So
that would have been
imagine your kids are
heartbreaking.
three,
Oh.
imagine your kids are 3 or 4 years older, and you walk them down to the station, you stick them on a train with a label round their neck saying, Gary O'Shaughnessy or whatever your kid's called, and you wave goodbye to your kids. You don't know where they're going. You don't know who's going to take them in. And you don't know how long they're going to be gone for. And so you literally don't know if you're ever going to see your kids again. Imagine, and that scenario happened to millions of families across the UK. It's just an extraordinary event.
I also
And
guess
so.
this was before the era of there's a mass proliferation of the motor car. Obviously, cars had existed, since the Model T in the 1920s as a mass-produced thing. But many Londoners wouldn't have been outside of London much, if at all, especially those from the more deprived
No.
sort of east of London, I guess.
My dad used to talk about the streets of London where he grew up. He was in Deptford and then Welling, which is sort of a bit further out in southeast London. And he just said there were no cars on the streets because parked on the streets because none of our parents owned one. And so,
Wow.
and he just said we used to play in the streets, cricket, football, all day long. And he used to say a ball and a bike were essential from the age of 5. And he used to describe huge fights that him and the other kids would get into. And just, you see the old pictures of the kids playing in the streets. That was the childhood that he describes. Now
And
you
it
wouldn't
doesn't
let your
happen
kid
too
play on
much
the
anymore,
streets. You're
does it?
scared they're going to get run over. Yeah, precisely. Anyway, so our story starts with mum in her front room and she's tying labels onto the two boys, my dad aged 7 and his brother aged 11. She's tying labels on with their names on, and they've got their little bags with their pajamas and their gas mask and a packed lunch, a sandwich or something. And in order to make light of the whole thing, she turned the whole thing into an adventure for the two kids. And she said, "You know how to write kisses on a postcard?" And the kids said, "Yes," with a cross. And she gave them a stamped addressed postcard with her name and address on it. And on the other side of the postcard, it said, "Dear Mum and Dad, arrived safe and well. Love Jack and Terry." And she then gave them a secret code. And wherever they ended up and whoever they ended up with, they were to put one kiss if it was horrible. They were to put two kisses if it was nice. And they were to put three kiss, sorry, they were to put two kisses if it was okay, and they were to put three kisses if it was nice. And then she would know. And this
Wow.
was their secret code. Okay. There's no mobile phones or like Skype or Zoom or any of that stuff. You can't like text your
No,
mum.
absolutely not.
You're literally, so they were, they walked, she walked off to the train station, Deptford train station, with all the other kids from the school. And then you've got this scene where the kids are all on the train and the mums and dads are all on the platform waving goodbye to their kids. And they don't know where they're going, who's going to be taking them in, how long they're going to be gone for. You can imagine the trauma. Then in the story, we then follow the kids all the way on their train journey. And the route, the tracks were diverted and they went all the way across London, all the way through Surrey, Hampshire, Dorset, Somerset, Devon, all the way down to Cornwall, which for those of your listeners from abroad, Cornwall is probably the most remote part of England. It's right on the southwest tip of England. Like the most famous landmark in Cornwall is called Land's End. It's that
Yes,
remote.
it
And
is. Yeah, it's still quite a drive from London. If you're trying to get it from London, you're going to be sitting in your car for the guts of, well,
it's
five,
a
six
5 or 6 hour
hours.
drive from London. And in a tiny village in Cornwall, Dad and his class, about 50 of the kids from Dad's school, were taken off the train. This is after a 4 or 5 hour journey. and they were herded into the village hall. And in those days, accents were really strong, much stronger than they are today. And you could almost tell somebody by their village 20 miles up the road. And the Cornish accent is a very, very strong accent. And it was in the middle of the countryside, in the middle of nowhere. And all these people talking like that, who are a very country, like the pirate accent derives from Cornwall. It's that kind of West Country accent. And they'd never heard smells like this before. They'd never heard accents like this before. And they were herded into the middle of the village hall. And then all the locals just stood round. And the expression was, "I'll take that one there." And they were just picked out like cattle in a cattle market. And their fate was sealed by whoever picked them out. And Dad and his brother were picked out by a Welsh couple. And I'll tell you more about them. A Welsh couple had moved down from Wales to Cornwall in the interwar years. And they were taken back to their cottage. And it was a tiny, tiny little cottage at the end of a row of cottages by the railway. And the man, his name was Uncle Jack, he worked on the railway. And my granddad and his uncle loved the railways. Their dad worked on the railways. They loved trains. And it was right by the London to Penzance line, which is one of the most famous Great Western lines, built by the Isambard Kingdom Brunel, the great Victorian engineer. And at the end of the garden, there was the train lines. There was a valley to explore, woods, a hill to climb, rivers to dam. And they walked into this house and there was no electricity. They didn't have electricity then, just oil lamps. And there was a cat asleep by the fire, a canary in a cage. There was a couple of chickens in the backyard and a pig. And Dad and his brother looked around him, and they thought they had died and gone to heaven. So I'm going to play you a track now, Patrick, from the show. And this would be track one, I guess, of the tracks that I sent you. And this happens on the very first night when the two boys are sitting in their room with just candlelight, trying to decide how many kisses to put on their card.
How many kisses?
I vote 3.
What would Mum and Dad think of it here?
Don't know.
No electricity. They wouldn't like that.
I don't care.
There's no bathroom.
I don't care.
Outside lav, all they have. I can't go in an outside lav.
I don't mind. I don't care.
What if it's freezing cold out there?
That's what the pot's for, don't you see?
I vote 1.
I vote 3.
Share, all squashed up in it.
I don't care.
Kisses on a postcard, we must write something we've got to do tonight. Kisses on a postcard, what'll they show? Only Mum is going to know.
What about Gwyn? Gwyn's not bad, even though you can see he's mad.
Auntie Rose, what do you say?
She says weird things, but she's okay. Not Uncle Jack, though, he plays rough. Pulled my hair, called me scruff.
Kisses on a postcard, what do we do?
I still say 3.
Well, I say 2. Kisses on a postcard, 3, 2, 1. Better be quick or it won't get done.
If we put less than 3, Mum and Dad will think it's rotten here. They'll be worried.
Yeah, well, there's the trains, they're good.
And the station, right next to us.
That's terrific.
Hey, wait, I've just remembered. Hens.
What about hens?
Eggs, stupid. Real eggs. Not that horrible powdery stuff. Eggs for you, eggs for me. Eggs for breakfast, supper and tea. Poached or baked, scrambled or fried.
On board with soldiers on the side.
What do you say now, what's your score? Say 4.
You can't.
Why not?
Mum only said up to 3.
But don't you see? The more kisses we put, the more happy they're going to be.
Yeah. It's terrific here, really, isn't it? Like being on holiday, only there's no sea.
We don't have to stop at 4. Let's do hundreds.
Yeah.
Kisses on a postcard, one by one. All round the edges, this is fun. Kisses on a postcard, squashed up tight.
Jack.
Night, Harry.
Look at them, fast asleep, and they've covered the card in kisses. Night-night, boys.
Wow, that was a very emotional piece. Tell us a little bit about that then, Dominic. What I'm guessing there were some undertones there of sorrow or detachment. Given their experience, tell us all about it.
So, well, the first part of that song, Kisses on a Postcard, is an original song composed by a chap called Gordon Clyde, also sadly no longer with us. But you might have heard the second part of the song, all the mums singing Goodnight Children Everywhere. And this was actually a song that was sung by Vera Lynn in World War II. That last 45 seconds, we just adapted it and inserted it because it blended in so well. And the song Goodnight Children Everywhere was played on the radio once and then it got banned because the impact of the song caused so many tears and emotional upheaval as mothers all around the country and fathers as well heard it. BBC, they weren't allowed to play it again. They banned it.
Well, I can see why. In terms of keeping up morale, that way maybe wouldn't have been the best thing.
Exactly. So I guess I can tell you a bit more about the story of their time. Like in terms of the musical Kisses on a Postcard, and you heard from that song why it's called Kisses on a Postcard. That's how the show got its title. And if it's what I've described to you is probably the first half hour of the musical. And in fact, it's 4.5 hours, and it's in half hour episodes. So you would listen to it in, you know, as you'd listen to any kind of serialized podcast in half hour episodes. And you can listen at kissesonapostcard.com or type it into your whatever podcast app you use and you can get it there. But what you get from the show and why it's of interest to history buffs is you get the whole of the story of World War II from the bombing of, from the evacuation of Dunkirk to the bombing of, London, to the evacuation of the kids, to the bombing of Plymouth. That was a very famous episode in history. The Germans targeted all the major industrial centres and Plymouth was a big port. So they bombed Plymouth.
Let's talk a little bit about that then, because a lot of our, I guess, American listeners will have heard of Plymouth because of the 1620 Mayflower pilgrims who sort of came all the way down from the rather flat Lincolnshire countryside all the way down to Plymouth to come, I guess, the Mayflower pilgrims on their way to the New World, New England, Massachusetts.
I think there's even a Plymouth in America.
Yeah, there is indeed. Yeah, there is. Tell us about that. Why did the Nazis bomb Plymouth? Obviously, they bombed the hell out of Coventry and they introduced a new word to the English language, to Coventrate or Coventration. And they bombed the hell out of London as well. I'm from Lewisham and you see in South East London and Croydon just the very visible effects of bombing. Sort of big gaps in Victorian streets, but also sort of quite horrific, horrible, concrete-esque 1950s architecture, especially in Croydon. But why did they bomb Plymouth? Quite out of the way. And
well,
I'm guessing it wasn't, whilst it was a port, it wasn't a major one anymore, I'm guessing.
Well, funnily enough, I'm talking to you from Lewisham. So I see the impacts of the bombing in Lewisham. And Dad in Deptford was only a mile or two up the road from Lewisham. And Deptford was where all the docks were. So that Deptford got absolutely annihilated as well. But Plymouth, yeah, it was a major port on the south coast. There were lots of warships in the estuary, in the Tamar estuary. And it was a important strategic port. And that's why the Nazis targeted it. Funnily enough, a lot of the ships coming to and from the US would come in via Plymouth. And Dad was billeted, the little village in the country, was about 20 miles from Plymouth. And they could see Plymouth from the Tor. The Tor is a Cornish word for a little hill. And there was a hill in the village and they could go and stand on the top of the Tor and they could see, they watched Plymouth get bombed. But you could see Plymouth, it was 20 miles away. But the first night when Plymouth got bombed, Dad was actually with Auntie Rose, the lady that took him in, and he was actually in Plymouth when the Germans bombed it. And they had to they spent the night in an underpass on the railway. You know, on the train stations, they have little underpasses on the train Absolutely. Stations where you walk from platform to platform. And he spent the night there, and then he got back to Plymouth for the very next day, and he actually saw. So he survived that bombing. He was there in the bombing, and he says his only recollection was the fact that everyone on the bench that they were sitting on was shivering, and he couldn't shiver at the same pace as everyone else. So he couldn't get his shivering in time to everyone else on the bench. It's a funny kind of distorted perception of a kid. But anyway, and he came back to the village the next day, and then the next day the whole village just stood on the tour and watched Plymouth get bombed from 20 miles away. And then the kids are all going, is that what's happening to our mum and dad in London? And you know, it's a tremendously dramatic moment in the story. And then he said, I think they bombed it. I think it was 2 or 3 days they bombed it for, and they totally laid it to waste. But for some reason, the ships in the estuary all survived. But he said Plymouth just burnt for a week. They didn't have the fire engines or whatever to put out the fires. They just didn't have the capability. And so at night, it would just be this red glow. You know how like the embers of a fire glow, and it would just be like that at night. And he said it was like a false dawn, and they just watched it. And at one point he was out in a field near his house, and they had a type of German bomber called it the Flying Pencil, which is a Dornier 16. And he was with Auntie Rose, and the Dornier 16 had been shot down, and it was coming down right where he was in this field. And he said it passed him, and he made eye contact with the gunner at the back of the Dornier, at the back of the pencil bomber. You know, it was that close to him. He made eye contact with the gunner, and the gunner had the choice to shoot this boy and this old lady down. Can you imagine? And the gunner chose not to shoot them.
Wow.
And then the plane crashed over the hill, and everyone in the plane died. But Dad said he'd never forget the look on that face. He saw the guy make the choice not to shoot them. And he said it lived with him. I'll say. wow. But yeah, it's in the show, as I say. And then the next great event in the story, and we can play another song here if you like, is prior to D-Day, all the American soldiers came over. And there was a regiment billeted in this village where Dad was staying. There used to be soldiers coming through all the time. They would stay in they'd commandeered the manor house, and all the soldiers would be put up in the manor house. But first it was British soldiers, and then it was the Americans. But as chance would have it, the regiment, or one of the regiments that was billeted on Dad's village, was a regiment from Louisiana. And they were all black. It was one of these all black regiments. And I used to say to Dad, no, you made that up. That's not true. You just made that up because it would just be a nice moment in the story. And he said, no, I swear it was true. And he was only like 9 years old at this point. So a lot of his memories are a bit hazy, but we since went back and did some research, and we found that yes, this regiment from Louisiana was billeted in this village. So Dad was telling the truth. And you can imagine, wow. You know, in that part of Cornwall in World War II, you know, somebody from the next village was a foreigner. And, you know, the English were English were foreigners. You know, the Tamar River was the boundary into England. You know, they considered England another country. Americans might have been, you know, from Mars or something, but black Americans. And, you know, nobody in the village has ever seen a black man before. And anyway, Dad tells stories. He said he had a tap dancing lesson from a man from New Orleans on a sheet of plywood outside the village gates. And he tells all these little stories. But anyway, this song that I'm about to play you is the song that we have when the soldiers arrive.
Hello.
How are you?
Good day. We're soldiers from the U.S. of A.
Pleased to meet you, sir.
Pleased to meet you, ma'am.
Pleased to meet you, pretty lady.
We're here for Uncle Sam. At your service this fine day.
Any questions,
please just say.
Questions? Lords!
What's it like in the States? Is it just like the flicks? What's the weather like? Have you flown in a plane? Are there cops and robbers? Are there gangsters too? Are there cowboys and Indians? Do you know John Wayne? Have you ever seen a puma? Have you eaten a satsuma? Do you like hamburgers? Do your cows go moo? Have you crossed the Mississippi? Have you caught a barracuda? Have you been to Colorado or to Kalamazoo? Have you got pubs?
No, we have bars.
Do you catch the bus?
No, we all drive cars.
Have you ever had a pasty?
No, we have not.
Is it true that you eat dogs?
Only if they're hot.
Have you crossed the Golden Gate? Have you climbed the Empire State? Have you ever smelt a skunk? Why'd you call a tramp a bum?
Do you have steam trains? Can you tell me, chum?
One last question.
Have you got any gum? Got any gum, chum?
We might have some.
Any gum, chum?
Now don't all scrum.
Any gum, chum?
It sure is yum. You can chew it till your mouth goes numb.
Got any gum, chum?
This sure is fun.
Any gum, chum?
Do the chewing hum.
Yummy, yum, yum.
Rum, pum, pum.
And that is how you do the chewing hum.
We've got snakes and alligators and our own refrigerators. Oranges and peaches, eagles, buffalo. Bears and avocados, a city called Chicago. Frightening tornadoes, tropics, desert and snow. We've got rodeos and ranches, rakes upon the branches. We drink lots of Coca-Cola and there's ice to crush. We've got Mormons, we've got Quakers, we've got towering skyscrapers, but no privies for us. Our lavatory's flush.
Do you drink tea?
No siree.
Speak Cherokee?
Not frequently.
Do you play billiards?
We shoot pool.
Would you like a game of cricket?
We don't understand the rules.
Do you know Clark Gable? Is Harper really dumb? Have you ever had a Hershey? Have you hit a home run? Please give me an answer. Can you tell me, chum? One last question. Have you got any gum? Got any gum, chum?
We might have some.
Any gum, chum?
Now don't all scrum.
Any gum, chum?
It sure is yum. You can chew it till your mouth goes numb.
Got any gum, chum?
It sure is fun.
Any gum, chum?
Do the chewing hum.
Yummy, yum, yum.
Rum, pum, pum.
And that is how you do the chewing hum.
Different message, I guess, from the previous song, which was like pulled on the heartstrings. How did that fit into the wider play?
Well, it's a happier song, that one.
Yes, and it certainly is.
What ended up happening to Dad, and this is the story of the show, is that there was a girl who was evacuated from Plymouth to the village. So she was a Devon girl and she was about 5 or 6 years older than Dad, maybe even 7 or 8 years older. And she taught him the facts of life, you know, a little house in the woods and stuff like that. And then, but when she was 15 or 16, she just lost interest in Dad. And she was only interested in all the soldiers who came through the village. First the English ones and then the Americans. And like a lot of women in World War II, she became pregnant by one of the American soldiers. And she was in the unfortunate situation of not even knowing who the father was, let alone, and she dreams of you know, the father coming back and she would become a GI bride and he would whisk her off to America. But of course he never did. But this is a big part of the story. And then Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack, the family that took Dad and his brother in, they had their own son, Gwyn, and he went off to fight, and he was part of the invasion of the soft underbelly of Europe, coming up through Italy. And he was killed in action in Sicily. And this is a tremendously emotional moment in the show. And Dad and his brother, after Gwyn was killed, they wrote a letter home to their parents saying that Dad, who at this point had run a scholarship to Dartford Grammar School, should come back to London, and Jack, his brother, should stay in Cornwall and become Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack's son. And they actually put the words, and then we've got one, then you've got one each, that's fair. So they, one of them was going to stay behind and become Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack's son. But Elsie, the girl who'd become pregnant by the American soldier, she was going to have to go into a home for unmarried mothers, which is what happened to those women. And she would probably be separated from her child. And to Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack, that was unacceptable. And so they ended up taking in her and her baby. So what a selfless couple they were. And
absolutely.
And I've since made contact with an old lady who lives down in the village, who was married not to one of the evacuees, but to one of the village boys with whom Dad used to play. They lived in the same cottages. And she said that that story is true, that they took in and there was a mixed race baby in the village and there was a big scandal and all the rest of it, but they took her in. So that's another amazing story from the show. And, you know, it's just, above all, Dad was a writer of comedy, so this is very funny. There's lots of funny bits you wouldn't know from what I've said, but it's also an incredibly emotional story about these incredible people, these selfless people of a different age. It's a real sort of celebration of humanity, and there's obviously great music in it, as I hope you've heard, but it's also an incredible educational experience about the war itself and the events of the war, but also what humans do under these most extreme circumstances. And we can learn what human beings were like and just the sheer humanity of human beings. So it's a very, very emotional story.
Well, that begs the question then, Dominic, where can we get hold of this? Where can we listen to it? And where do you go next with it? But most how can we listen to it?
Well, the website, it's got a website, kissesonapostcard.com. And from the website, it takes you to the link to the Apple podcasts, or if you're an Android podcast or a Google podcast person, it takes you to the link there. Or you can just go into your podcast app or Spotify, or whatever it is, and type in Kisses on a Postcard, and you can listen to it that way. It's 10 episodes, each roughly half hour long. And I promise you, it'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry. And if you actually have a relative who was evacuated in the war, you can also buy, like many of them can't really get to grip with podcasts and so on. But I also sell CDs. So you can buy a CD, you know, to send to your older relative or whatever, who is still living in the physical world of CDs. But the podcast itself is free. And all I want, Patrick, is as many people as possible to listen to it. That is literally all I care. It's cost me a lot of money to make this podcast. I do not care if I'm going to lose a fortune on it, and I just don't care. All I want is for the story to exist and as many people as possible to listen to it. And I promise it will enrich your life if you do.
Well, that sounds fantastic, Dominic. And social media, are you on there? If people want to follow you, ask you questions, etc.
Yeah, I've got DominicFrisby.com is my website, and I'm at Dominic Frisby on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook, but I don't really look at Facebook. But Twitter, I don't really tweet that much about Kisses on a Postcard, but if anyone tweets me about kisses on a postcard, they get immediate retweets. So by all means, because I'm, as I say, it's literally my life's mission is to get as many people to listen to this as possible. And eventually I'd love it to become a show in the West End or a Netflix series or whatever. But for now, I just want people to listen to the podcast.
Well, you never know, Dominic. Thank you so much indeed for sharing that story. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the Versus History podcast. And look, I hope people listening, look, jump on it. It's out there. Go grab it via all big podcast platforms. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Dominic Frisby, for giving up your time to come and speak to us today. We're exceptionally grateful. On behalf of myself, the editors and all the listeners, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Patrick. And if you want, you can play that last song there as well.
I do
if you want to end on a song.
Let's do that. So there we go. The last piece of music directly from the show. It's going to hit you now before the outro. So listeners, enjoy.
Long ago, grown-ups say, happy sounds would always fill the air, spreading cheer far and their message everywhere. England's bells are silent now. When will they ring once more? Storm clouds hide our island now, dark with the shadow of war. Once those bells rang everywhere,
thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.